Hey guys, it's your host and content creator, Ash, and I'd like to welcome you to another episode of Murder Docs. So today's episode is episode 10, and it's a bit of a doozy. Honestly, it's about that story, the tale as old as time, regarding siblings just not getting along. But this is more than just oil and water not mixing. It's more treacherous, sinister, and just downright cruel. I hope you enjoy it. Happy reading, happy listening. My dear sister, my life was stable when it just included myself and my parents. My father cheated and found the true love of his life, he claimed, after working long hours at the office. He found this woman at his job, and they started from there. Casual sleeping together and sneaking around turned to love, and then they had gotten pregnant. My mother found out after his mistress was already 3 months along and had no plans of termination. She couldn't handle it. My mother was a fragile and quiet woman, a woman who was a stay-at-home mom, and she was my best friend. The affair broke her, and even then, she was still willing to save the marriage. She truly loved my father, but he didn't love her. The bastard, a true selfish son of a bitch. He wanted a divorce and for her to make co-parenting work on his terms. She was shattered. They were high school sweethearts, and he, her first and only love. He didn't have sympathy when she struggled getting out of bed. She turned to drinking, and that took away the perfect mother she was. Gone were the days of the two of us baking cookies and making crafts, and in its place was her taking pills and then numbing her. She could barely look at me and didn't want to be bothered by me. I was rejected, and it was my father's fault. A 5-year-old wants nothing more than a happy mom, but instead, I had her ghost. I wanted to fix what my father had broken, what he had destroyed, but I only had so much ability and knowledge. I remember the day she left. This woman I had never seen before had a swollen belly, picked me up from daycare. She was a pretty woman, but she wasn't my mom. She said we could be friends and she was excited to meet me finally. She went on and on about becoming my new best friend, sharing experiences with me, and making our home a safe place. I sat in her back seat, strapped in my car seat, my seatbelt strapped tightly, and all I could think about was getting home to my mom. I drew her a picture of a happier time, a family trip to the beach, and hoped it would cheer her up. To my surprise, after jumping out of the stranger's car, I raced to the front door to my mother's bedroom. The door was opened and the room empty. Happiness fluttered inside of me, and I was excited that she had finally gotten out of bed and was probably in the kitchen, making dinner, like she used to. I raced to the kitchen, and I didn't see her. Maybe she was in the bathroom putting on her favorite perfume and getting pretty. She was the prettiest woman I had ever known. I checked there, but she wasn't there either. I searched every room, calling out Mommy. My yelling for her fell on deaf ears. She was gone. I ran back to the living room, where the stranger stood by my father, held in his arms, her face buried into his chest, and her belly pushing them apart. My father looked at me, his eyes wet with tears. "Hey, buddy," he greeted me. I knew something was wrong, and I instantly blamed him for whatever it was. Soon, over time, I adjusted to the change as best as I could. My father didn't mention my mother's whereabouts. Hell, he never mentioned my mother. I continued to long for her, and her absence only made my curiosity grow. I knew 7 was her favorite number, and even though I couldn't tell time, I'd sit by the phone and waited for the ring every time the clock showed 7. It didn't matter if it was in the morning or at night. I wanted nothing more than to hear her voice, to smell her perfume, and to feel her tight, loving hugs. My father's mistress turned fiance moved in with us a few weeks later. Her name was Jenna. She started doing overnights, and then it went from there. They tried to prepare me for the new baby. They showed me pictures of ultrasounds, clothing items, and toys, but I had no interest in it. They told me her name and tried to give me the title of Big Brother, with the bells and whistles of responsibility. I told them over and over I didn't want a sister. No matter how hard they pushed for us to love one another, I hated her, even though she wasn't here yet. During Jenna's baby shower, the presents from family and friends filled the nursery. The room was painted a soft rose pink and had white flowers decorated on the walls. As my father and Jenna were downstairs, I took a red marker and scribbled. An hour had passed, and no one noticed my absence until Jenna decided to give a tour of the nursery to the 20 guests. To her horror, she found my art. I drew my name on every wall, drew a face that represented the baby, and put an X over it. My scribbles filled the room. Jenna screamed and cried for the next 3 days, and I was again punished. They fixed the room, and I wasn't permitted inside of it, as per Jenna's demand. Finally, the day had come, Amelia's birth, and the feelings inside of me brewed. I sat at home with my grandparents, my father's family, of course, until they got the word that their new granddaughter had finally been born. My father took me to the hospital, and everyone's excitement had begun spilling over. My grandparents didn't much care for my mother, but welcomed this perfectly good homewrecker to be merged into their family. "This is your sister, Noah. Come give her a kiss." Sitting on the edge of the bed as Jenna, my stepmother, held this little bundle wrapped in a blanket against her chest, my dad stood behind me and held his hands on my shoulders. He knelt beside me and whispered in my ear and tried to coach me to see what the bundle was. I crawled up to the top of the bed and sat in the lap of my stepmother. She held this little baby, and even at 5 years old, all I felt inside of me was anger. I wanted to punch her. Something inside of me wanted to take this baby and slam her to the ground. The adults in the room smiled in anticipation of the siblings finally meeting. But for the past 6 months, my life had changed for the worst. Happiness spiraled out, and the normalness I had faded. I was an only child, and now I had to share my home with a stranger and a new addition. A sister I didn't want, and a stepmother I barely knew. Looking back, I can remember every time I've tried to end her. When they brought her home the very first night, my intentions for her continued into their dark manifestation. She rested in her crib, and I, standing with my face pressed against the bars, watched her sleep. The smell of new baby turned my stomach. Her breath hinted to the scent of consumed milk, and the thoughts of putting a pillow over her face twisted in my head. She continued to grow, and my disgust of her festered. On a cool winter day, when she began learning to crawl, Jenna left her on the floor and went into the kitchen. I sat across the room playing with my cars and watched for a clear opportunity. I picked up my sibling and wandered with her up the stairs. She almost slipped from my arms, but I made it to the top. I plopped her at the top of the stairs with her back facing them and me standing at her front. I wanted to push her. Something inside of me wanted to watch her fall down the stairs and hear her bones crack. Sadly, my father was upstairs and intervened. He began yelling at me and questioning what I was doing. Naturally, I lied and said we were going to play in my room. He picked up Amelia and took her back to her mother. I was punished and sat in my room for the rest of the day. However, my antics continued, but on a smaller scale.
I would take her pacifier and swish it in the toilet before giving it to her. I'd pinch her until she cried, making sure not to leave a mark. Even after my targeting, she still would smile at me after being consoled. My parents just thought she was a fussy baby until Amelia turned two. For Amelia's second birthday, my parents had a party at a local party center. It included a ball pit, a mascot, and a children's jungle gym. I kept to myself at the party, but remembered seeing Amelia in the ball pit. I wanted to bury her and let the balls consume her body. I swam through the colorful sea, filled with different shades of blue and red, coming up from behind her. I pulled her down and tried to sit on top of her. Being only seven, some would say I had some questionable behaviors, but to me, this felt normal. I didn't want a sister, and the 2 years I had her made no change in me liking her. A staff member caught me, and I quickly got up and ran out of the pit. My parents were alerted, and Amelia was saved. The episode triggered a new storm of social services coming to the home and them questioning my parents. They wanted to ensure that Amelia was safe around me. When questioned, I lied about my love for my sister. I made up a story about playing with her and using my imagination. They wrote it off as horseplay and gave my parents the warning of needing to improve their supervision. Jenna, however, was leery of me. Our interactions became more toxic from there. She would have chosen her child over me, and she made it known. Jenna wanted me in counseling and to get evaluated, but my father declined it, saying I had a lot to process and would eventually grow out of it. I heard their arguments over it one night as I stood outside their bedroom door. Jenna told my father that she feared me, always had been, and worried I would turn out like my mother. It struck a nerve. The mention of my mother rarely happened except for her birthday and mine. Our birthdays were 3 days apart, and I'd celebrate hers in my room alone. From this point on, Jenna was my enemy. Over time, my parents stopped fighting me to enjoy my sister. I kept my distance from her, but also triggered her and targeted her in another way. She'd learned to talk and could tell the adults if I had harmed her, and when she did, I got punished. When Amelia turned 4 years old, they finally had the wedding they had planned for the past 4 years. It was a summer event, and Jenna looked pretty. She was still poison in my eyes, but today was her day. Jenna warned me about ruining it, and threatened to send me away if I did. She was a bitch when my father wasn't around. Amelia was dressed in a pretty and pink dress with gold accents, and I wore a suit. I was particularly moody that day. The wedding fell on the day before my mother's birthday, and I knew Jenna had planned for that. She wanted any excuse to get me out of the house. I was a ticking time bomb in her eyes, and she wanted me to have some sort of episode to warrant her suspicions, and ultimately get what she wanted. Me out of the picture. The wedding went well, and the picture showed the perfect family Jenna and my father wanted. At the reception, my father and Amelia danced and twirled around Jenna. I sat at the table alone, watching them. No invitation to party like a whole, just smiling faces when it came to their little family being acknowledged. My existence was ignored, and I walked around the church parking lot, just plotting. My parents were going to leave in the next few hours to their honeymoon, while Amelia and I would be left with our grandparents at home, and they would return 3 days later. Knowing this, I behaved myself to the point Jenna's radar on me relaxed, and they had no reason to worry about my dear sister being left in the house with me. That was their mistake. After the reception, they left to the airport. Amelia and I went home with Grandma Martha and Grandpa David. They weren't as hands-on with me as they were with Amelia, so it gave me freedom to breathe and to plot. The day ended, and I had plans for a sinister deed. that would honestly cause some spine-chilling effects. The next day came, and Amelia sat on the sofa eating a bowl of cereal as her cat, Rose Jam, rested in her lap. My sister loved cats. Therefore, I hated them. Everything that would bring her joy sickened me. Amelia was a burden in my life. Rose Jam was an abused animal my parents got a few months prior from the shelter for Amelia's birthday. Amelia and the feline got along like best buddies, but our interactions were never good. Even in passing, the cat would hiss at me and arch its back as if I was threatening, as if it feared me. He would swat and scratch at me. It was an annoying little creature. I would just stare at it, feeling the urges to do things to it. I wanted it to run away or to stop living. Later that night, as Amelia slept, I crept into her room. Rose Jam rested at the edge of her bed, where her feet laid covered under the blankets. I quickly grabbed him and placed him in a duffel bag, zipping it tightly to ensure he was inside. Creeping out of her room, I made my way to the basement and locked the door behind me. I could hear the cat hissing and meowing as it tried to scratch its way out of the bag. Placing the bag on the floor, I went to the shelf where my father kept his tools and grabbed a hammer. I walked back over to the bag and smiled as I raised the hammer above me and began swinging it down. Smashing the bag over and over, I could hear metal hitting bone. The creature's cries and suffering continued, and I swung harder, making my hits heavier. A puddle of blood began forming from the bottom of the bag and seeped through the top. I could feel specks of blood on my skin. I unzipped the bag and exposed the carcass of the cat. His skull was crushed, and his eyes lay open. I had never seen a dead thing before, in real life. But something inside of me wanted to see this again. But it had to be bigger. The excitement in me began to form. Once Rose Jam was dead, ideas swirled in my head of what I would do next. I thought about what I would do with the corpse of the family pet. I contemplated the idea of laying the body in bed with Amelia, and it made me smile. Thoughts of listening to her screams when she found the body made me chuckle. But that would surely give Jenna a reason to send me away. I had to be smart. I took the body outside and hid it behind my sister's playhouse. But I wanted more of a shock. I wanted her to find him. I went into the playhouse and placed the creature in the oven. After I cleaned up my mess and went about my night, I crawled into bed and slept so calmly. It was the best sleep I had had since my mother left. Being a summer month, the next day was supposed to be a scorching hot day in the 90s. The smell of rotting cat would peak. A full day passed, and no sight of Rose Jam. Amelia came into my room and asked if I had seen him, and I shrugged my shoulders and told her to leave my space. I colored as I listened to Amelia's cries of worry and wanting her cat. My grandfather asked me if I had seen the creature, and I lied, saying I hadn't. He knew the cat and I didn't really mesh, so we rarely had contact. So my lack of engagement wasn't unusual. Day two of Rose Jam's absence came and went. Amelia was crying, and my grandfather tried to console her, as best as he could. He suggested that they play in Amelia's playhouse. I overheard the suggestion in the hall. I wanted to see the final moments of my evil scheme come together. They were outside, and I sat by my window that had direct eye and ear shot of the playhouse. "Let's bake cookies and play pastry shop," Grandpa said excitingly as he walked out of the back door, his hand holding Amelia's as she wore her princess dress, swinging his arms back and forth. I watched them walk inside the playhouse, and not even 5 minutes later, the screams of Amelia and my grandfather rang so loud it alerted the neighbors. I watched Amelia run out of the playhouse and shook with fear. My grandfather stood outside of the playhouse, using its walls for balance as he vomited his breakfast from a few hours before. I shut my window and laughed so hard at the sight of their disgust. I laid on my bed and continued my laughing fit. My grandmother ran from the house and met them in the yard. She hailed Amelia as my grandfather stood shooken and confused. I could hear Amelia's description of Rose Jam's body a few moments later. I went and saw for myself. Maggots crawled from his mouth and his eye sockets. The door of the oven remained open, and the carcass of the black family pet laid there, flies swarming inside and out of him, and dry blood stiffened his fur. A true disturbing sight. My grandfather shuffled me and my sister back into the house as few neighbors came to investigate and assist. My parents were called and were told about what had happened. They canceled the remaining time and booked a flight back home. I overheard my grandfather on the phone with my dad. Jenna could be heard yelling in the background. I knew she felt I did it, but my grandfather told her he didn't believe it. The police were called, and everyone assumed foul and cruel acts were committed by Satanist teenagers in the area. Rose Jam was later buried in the yard that night. Amelia had begun night terrors to the point she couldn't sleep alone. My parents wouldn't be back until the morning. And that night, I rested again so peacefully. I put Amelia in her place and wanted her to know I had control. Amelia was given counseling and she struggled. I enjoyed watching her break. A few years has passed, and here and now, as a 15-year-old, my hatred towards Amelia continued, but my desire for violence and its result of arousal for me grew. I kept a stash of photos depicting women bound and gagged in my bedroom to be used for my pleasure. I wanted to bind women, to hurt them, and to make her feel that I was in control. The thought of hurting others aroused me, and the sight of watching someone be inflicted with pain excited me. I always climaxed the hardest at the vision of Rose Jam's corpse. I always knew I was different. I always knew something was off. Girls my age made me feel awkward, and I was a loner. I always kept to myself. My only outlet was journaling. When my mother left, it was always hard to talk to anyone. I despised my dad, and Jenna was a joke. I had no one to vent my frustrations or my happiness to. I did, however, find an online community who shared my interest for violence and desire for pain. I kept an electronic journal on my laptop and would write entries daily. It started a few years back, and it was my peace. I didn't have judgment or stares or comments about my desires to harm or my liking of watching snuff films. My mental health was never explored, and honestly, if it had been, I probably wouldn't be here. I sat on the floor of my bedroom, knees up and my elbows resting on them. I stared across the room. The silence of the household echoed. My hands were covered in dry blood, and my shirt, damp and torn, stuck to me. I felt a sense of accomplishment, as if I had finally won my battle. Amelia laid across the room on the floor, a steak knife sticking out of her chest. I lost count of how many times I stabbed her. At one point, I had to use multiple knives because they just kept breaking off inside of her. Hours had passed since our struggle. I came home from school, and as per usual, I ventured to my room. Instead of finding my room, my chamber of peace, uninhabited, I found Amelia sitting at my laptop. She had found my journal and read through my entries. She found my website searches of women, death, and violence. All of them opened in pages, and violent pornography echoed through the speakers. Our parents were at home, and Amelia thought snooping through my stuff would keep her occupied. She had had dance class, but it was canceled, and to pass time, she invaded my life again.
I confronted her, and her eyes swelled with fear. She had read into my darkness and knew what I was capable of. She knew about Rose Jam, and she told me she would tell. Instead of trying to calm her down, I allowed my lust for death to consume me. I had stored some knives in my room over the years and learned about cutting techniques, so they would come in handy. My parents wouldn't miss a knife that just disappeared. They would just replace it. With my stash handy, I simply locked my bedroom door and smiled at her. She stood up from my desk and backed away against the wall. She put her hands up, but the little girl didn't have a chance. I was hungry for her life. I had never stabbed a living person before, but I can honestly say, killing another human isn't like the movies. It's far more satisfying watching it for yourself. The knowing that you are responsible for their life's end is such a powerful and intoxicating feeling. Tonight, there were no boundaries, and this didn't have to end. My parents would be home shortly, and I was ready to see what more I could accomplish. Oh man, so I hope you guys enjoyed that. That was pretty intense. A little bit about myself. So I actually come from a big family. I'm number 8 out of 9 siblings. I have 4 sisters and 4 brothers. And let me tell you, there were some days that, you know, we just didn't get along. And then there were some days we were best of friends. It's still like that as an adult, you know, life is just life. But to actually kill one of them, I could never. Now, would I trade one in for $1 million? Possibly, because I have student loans and those shits are actually terrible. So I get it. I absolutely get it. But also another fun fact about myself, I actually had a situation where my uncle got into a physical altercation with my other uncle, and they were brothers. And, you know, when alcohol isn't fueled with, you know, emotions, you act stupid and you don't do the things that a rational person would do. So they got into a fight, and one thing led to another, and the other one was stabbed. He did pass away. I was 7 when this happened. And, you know, it did cause a rift in the family, and, you know, emotions were high, and you had to kind of pick a side. Like, what side would you be on? His side or the victim's side? And, you know, some of the family members did kind of, you know, fade into that, and other family members were able to forgive and move on, and, you know, it's never the same, but you find a new normal. That uncle did go to jail. He was prison. He was incarcerated until I was about almost 20. So, you know, he did a good chunk of time, and it was, you know, just trying to figure out how to make amends and get back into the good graces of the family. So I understand from that perspective, you know, it's a lot to take in. While I was in college, I also actually did a presentation for the Academy of Criminal Justice Sciences, and my topic that I was researching was murder in families. So I got to study parents who kill their children, children who kill their parents, and siblings who kill other siblings. And I actually just have to dig that paper out and try to, like, decipher it, you know, and just see, you know, methods and reasons and all that stuff. But part of the cool instance of it was I got to research, you know, cases. And that's my favorite part, is the cases where you get to dive deep and see about, like, experiences, victimology, all of that. It was a great experience. Definitely recommend. So, sorry for rambling on for the past, like, 4 minutes or so, but I hope you continue to participate in my journey of chaos into the dark things that come out of my head. Thanks, guys. Until the next episode.